My name is Dorothy Skinner, and today I'm talking with Mr. Lindsay Gordon at his home in Clive in Farndon House, where this interview is being recorded. Perhaps we could start with your family background. Where and when were you born?
I was born in July the 31st, 1894. The bearing of this child is very interesting about history at the time, because when I was born, the only doctor was in Napier, and we had to get the man that looked after all the horses in those days. My father got him to ride from Clifton Station to Napier to bring Dr. W. Moore out to Clifton, homesick, to bring this into the world. And that was a brother of the old original J.N. Anderson, that had the nursery garden way up in the hill, not far from the public hospital. That's the first thing. Well, that was the man who rode the horse. That's the connection there. Later on, years later on, here, I happened to meet that same man, and I was thrilled to the core. Having met him, I thought he'd been dead years ago. And I said, was it worthwhile your riding all the way to Napier on horseback to bring the doctor back? Or is it just now?
And where was your mother born?
Mother was born at Riversleigh. It's a great big house, halfway between here and Havelock North, on the right hand side, going to Havelock.
Can you remember the date when she was born?
No, I've forgotten that she was the fourth one. No, I can't. No, I can't. I can tell you all about in the cemeteries. All that's written down in the cemetery.
Where was your father born?
My father, I'm sure, looking back, was born in India, I think. Because that's, again, a sidetrack, a very interesting sidetrack going back into history.
Where were they married? Were they married in India?
No. Maidash, yeah. In those days, my grandfather Tanner didn't want his daughters to marry at all. And the Nerurura used to be between him and civilization, really. And I don't know how they ever got caught him. Still don't know.
What religion were your parents?
My grandfather Gordon was Church of England, or the Low Church in those days, because he was Scottish. And you were proper Scot.
Who were your godparents?
Her father and...
Miss Tanner.
Miss Tanner's father.
My father was born in 1870. Was your mother older than me?
Oh, yes.
So she was born somewhere in the 60s.
Your father's towards the last effort. He has a very big family.
Do you know anything about your grandparents? Where they were born?
Oh, well, then, which grandparents do you want, male or female?
Your mother.
My mothers were born out here at the Riversleigh House, where the bulk of the children were born.
And what was your father's occupation before he was married?
Father.
Grandfather Taylor.
Yes.
Now, which do you mean? What did you say? What is it?
Well, your father's occupation.
Yes, farm.
And when did he buy his farm? And where was it?
He didn't buy it. He inherited it from my grandfather. It was originally Clifton Station was 13,000 acres. Well, yes, it's all a very big subject you're
asking.
It is.
We'll just move on to that a little later. How many brothers and sisters did you have?
One sister, Eileen.
And were so born?
Yes, in Clifton.
And tell me a little bit about your life as a child. You grew up in Clifton?
Partly. At 3 years old, we went with our nurse, father and mother, and nurse for my sister and myself to England. We stayed with my grandfather in his lovely Georgian house in Devonshire, Northam. We stayed there for 2 years. We had a photograph of the donkey cart. I remember all that very well, because we spent 2 years in England.
Can you tell me a little about your home here at Clifton?
When we were coming Then I got to deviate. You ask me a question like that. It's a very long subject. I don't actually remember the original house of Clifton. I've got photographs. I'll show you all the photographs on the walls. The original house, I don't remember that, because when we came back from England when I was 5, I remember all that. But the house had burnt down. By the time we arrived in New Zealand, it took many weeks to come out here, I can assure you. And by the time we arrived out here, the original Clifton House, a lovely old place, I'll show you a photograph, that had burnt down. And my Tanner grandparents' lovely, great big house, that had been burnt down too, all about the same period. And we had nowhere to go at all. This is when I was 5 years old.
About the turn of the century.
Just about the turn, just at the time of the turn of the century, that's right.
So the house was rebuilt?
So the house is rebuilt, I think the present was 1902. Oh, I remember all the incidents too, the whole lot. Very nasty incidents too. Now I got a very good memory. I can tell you where the hidden cache is too.
Is the house still standing?
Oh, yes.
And do you remember who designed it?
I can't remember who designed it, but Bull Brothers built it. It was their first big house to build. And I can remember, well, I can tell you an awful story. I remember the people that carted. I can remember everything about that. I remember seeing all the wood stacked like that for a year. And they wouldn't build it in those days until it had been all seasoned. It was all hot timber.
Who lived in the house apart from you and the family? Was it just the family?
Oh, no, dear. It's still there, the house. It's there now.
Is it still occupied by members of the family?
Oh, it's occupied by my great old great great nephew, one of my half brother's sons. It's an awful history I've got.
What was your family life like?
Oh, God, you're going back in the good old days. At 27 years old, I remember having to raise my cap in Herschel Street. 27 years old in those days, so men of my father's age. Call them sir.
Who made the decisions in your family?
Both mine. I had a wonderful mother. Really wonderful mother. She was killed in the first earthquake car crash. Her father was very badly injured at Hedersville. One train a day and it passed through the middle of Hedersville.
And as a child, what were your leisure activities?
Oh, vast, because in those days there were no shops, there were no means of getting there. And if we were given a toy, that's why I look after everything that I've got. Because I was trained, we used to look after anything that was given to us, because gifts like that were very rare. But we had animals, you see.
Did you ride a lot?
Yes, from childhood. My mother imported one of her nieces. This is Herrick, her sister. This shepherd came here, her mother, Mrs. McIntyre. She was brought up as a sister of ours. My mother couldn't have any more, and she'd like a Māori. She borrowed one from my aunt, brought up with us entirely.
Can you remember any stories you were told as a child?
Oh, no, because those would go in one year and out of the other. All that I learned from my parents, do unto others as you'd be done by. And my sister and I, and my wife, we all lived here, you see, in the end. We were brought up very strictly indeed.
Are there any events in your childhood which stuck in your mind?
So many. I'll tell you one thing, it came out in the wireless the other day, in an interview, I think, or something of that sort, and I laughed. Because there were no doctors or anything of that sort available. If anything happened when we were children, and we were all cutting ourselves and doing that sort of thing, and we'd had a cut, we had no sticking plaster and things like we've got today, we'd go into the old stables where we had tremendous number of draft horses, etc., and go and get a decent cobweb and wrap that round the wound. Straight off, hangy there. And we never got any diseases from it. Stopped the flow of blood.
So they were a natural antiseptic.
I saw that the other day, rather interesting, in the paper that someone had done that. Who actually intervened? We were isolated, you see. It's a long way.
What did you do about your school?
Oh, we had governesses. We had governesses until I went to Old Herritonga. And I was, what, 9, I think it was. And 9 or 10. Because I left there when I was 12 to go home to England.
Can you remember what you studied at school when you went to Herritonga?
I've got no brains. I've got no academic brains at all.
You went back to England for how long?
Well, I went to school in England because my parents, they both had English education. Both sides of my family, all of them had English education. And they were determined that my sister and I would have an English education, particularly me, because being born a colonial, they thought I'd be much more useful to society if I had an English education as well, you know, to look at things on both sides, because they'd had that. And my father thought that I'd be much more useful if I could look at things from a different point of view to a colonial one. You notice I still call England home. And, you know, all I do allude to it as home. Spent 4 years here.
Before we move on to your work life, you are a Gordon.
I am a Gordon.
Your family background.
Yes.
You were Scots.
Scots.
The Highlanders.
Gordon Highlanders. Got our own tartan. I gave the last of my tartan to my great nephew, who's now head of the, whatever it is, the Scottish thing around here. I gave it only 2 days ago, that's the last. This belonged to my sister, who bought that in Scotland in the early 50s.
Very attractive.
I gave him my one. This is the dress tartan, not the ordinary tartan.
When you came back from England, you started your life on the farm, did you?
No, wait a moment.
After your schooling in England?
I came back. I went as a, do you call it when you go on someone else's farm?
A cadet.
Cadet. I went cadet to Spring Hill. Williams is up there at Artois. He was the son of J.M. Williams. And I went there because my father said the station then was, when we came back, 7,000 acres. It's a very long story. And he quite rightly said that he wasn't going to train me there. So they took me as a cadet with the Wilders at the Spring Hill, which is part of Artois, the owner of Artois. And it was from there, 1913, that mother was killed. And then with all the kerfuffle that went on there, it left my father with just my sister and two Chinese servants, a cook and a housemaid, men. It was an interesting thing. All that was brought up in Parliament, whether we should be allowed to keep them on. Chinese as servants. Well, anyway, we had to get rid of them because my sister was there, all alone, all day, with two men, Chinese servants. So we had to get rid of them. I can ramble on for years.
What about the First World War?
That's a very long story, again. I've forgotten when we went home. My sister, in the meantime, see, my sister married a second cousin of ours, a wonderful man, a St. Hill. And that left just my father and myself. I'm talking about at the beginning of the First World War. And no one knew anything about that type of war at the time. And in the end, my father and I said, oh, we'll go home to England and see what we can do. Well, we were staying in London at the time, and there was an urgency when the Germans got within 20 miles or 20 kilometers, call it what you like, of Paris. and they had no equipment at all in any way to start a war or to continue a war. Well, anyway, they sent out an urgent message to England. Could they supply free ambulances? The people that got them had to buy their car, turn it in those days, a long time ago, we bought a DeLorme Belleville, my father. Said, this is something practical that I can do, give an awful lot of money. I can supply them with an ambulance and a driver. So that's how it all started. And the long story, I went out there and I had to join the French army. Didn't see any English, didn't talk any English, and we were paid a sou a day, but we were given the honorary rank of a lieutenant. That was here. It was a Red Cross on the thing, and we were under army law, and it's a very long story. The Mad English, as they were always known in the old days, but we're still the Mad English, as I know. Then the war went on, and I was in the Battle of Verdun. I don't know if you've ever heard of Verdun, where the Germans very nearly took it. And I got relics here that I can show you that I put under my war coat and brought home. There's a beautifully lovely brass and things, that sort of thing, just shattered to blazes, just lying about everywhere. And I picked up one or two of the things. These days you couldn't do, but in those days it was. And I've got a piece of a shell too that dropped outside our section, which I think 20 ambulances, isn't it? And we each had a Frenchman with us. So if anything went wrong, we had a Frenchman that could speak as well, you see, on board. And we never went to the front without a Frenchman. Oh, it's a very long story. I was there until the war went dribbling on. Verdun is a fortified town, you know. It's a basin with an entrance to the basin. The whole way round is excavated and all got doors, and everything's underground in this huge fortress. And acres. And this huge building that housed all of our working ambulances that were on duty, which would be about 10 in those days, underneath the seats where the army drilled in bad weather. Huge buildings. Well, the shell dropped one evening at the entrance to this. And this is a hole about as big as this room. They used to drag the horses to them, put them in the holes and cover them up. Safe digging. Well, I've got a photograph of that. Can't find it at the moment.
So at what stage did you return to New Zealand?
Oh, well after the war, because I went to Italy. Yeah. And I ended the war in Trieste. And my half-brother, he was in the English army, the Second World War. My half-brother ended the war also in Trieste. Extraordinary.
And how long were you in Italy?
About a year. Hated it.
What did you hate?
Oh, we didn't have any frontline work. There was no risk of any sort. It was a very dangerous job, hours, you know.
What regiment were you with?
No regiment. We were with, all I know is we were in the Second Army. And I've got a photograph. I've got the Croix de Guerre, and our section had the biggest honor that any army can ever give anyone. They invested the whole of our number 10 unit with the Croix de Guerre, which meant that we had to have it painted on our ambulances to show what distinctive section it was.
When were you married?
February the 2nd, 1922.
And your wife, what was her name?
Alan.
And where did your wife live?
Right in the back blocks near Cape Runaway. And I couldn't get to her. I took Carl Tanner. I was hunting. I was 27 then. I got married. I took Carl Tanner up there because I'd seen a woman that struck me a lively, exactly what I wanted. That sort of thing. beautiful little garden, lively little thing. And she lived way in the Wapos in those days. And the awful depression was on. Everyone had lost all their money and everything. And I took him up the coast. I was living in Clifton. I was running Clifton for my father then. And I told my father I was going up the coast to look at some heifers. Oh, he said, I'm coming too. See our faces drop. I said to Carl, oh Lord, how are we going to shake the old man off? Knowing the old man well. So we stayed in Gisborne until the old man said, when are you going up further to see the heifers? Oh, there's no hurry. This went on every morning. He said, where are you off? Oh, no hurry. We're going to have a look around Gisborne. Oh, the old man said, I've got Sanders knocking about here. I'm going home by hard car. Exactly what we wanted. 4 days of the old man in the hotel. Well, we got rid of him. Then we got in the car and went up the coast. And we got near Cape Runaway. And we couldn't get up to my wife. Because the only means of getting up in those days was up this big river. And you had to cross it the whole time. And the only way they came down was the bullock train. So we tried every means. We just couldn't get up. So we gave it up and came down. And then I met her again at Teote. She's got no Williams blood in her, but she's a cousin of the Williamses up there. Sam and Williams, you see. They're cousins through the female side.
And so where were you married?
Married? No, where were we? Oh, yes. We were married in Havelock. Yes, we were married in Havelock. That's right. And my father-in-law, manager of a huge company in the Falkland Islands. I'm talking Seddon's day. But anyway, we were married in Havelock, very small wedding. My father-in-law couldn't afford to give us a wedding because he had no money. So I said to him, with a very fine man, my Jimmy called a spade too. We got on very well.
And what date was this?
2nd of February, 1922. I arranged all the wedding and that sort of thing. Did it as far as it wouldn't embarrass him. In those days, you had to ask your father-in-law if you could have his daughter. My sister and I are living in Clifton on our own there, you see. My father was in England at the time. We sent him away to get rid of him. We had to, but then, you see, we got my father-in-law, who didn't know us, to come and stay the night. You did those sort of things in those days. My sister discreetly left the morning room and went to bed, you see. Then I left with this non-talking father-in-law to be, and I had to make all the conversation rather shaky. And then he wouldn't say anything, wouldn't ask me any questions at all. So in the end, I wanted to go to bed. So I said to him, well, I suppose so, you know, I can support a wife. Wish to God I could say the same. I said, well, now, Wills had whisker, all as did in those days. I said, would you like a drink for you? Don't touch his son. So, I got him upstairs in bed, and I went to my sister and told her all about it. I said, my dear, we've got a toughie as a father-in-law. Well, anyway, we were married, and we lived there. We had to get rid of my father, because it would interfere the way as I managed Clifton, you see. Although I managed it, it would interfere with everything. I can tell you all the stories, but too long. My sister and I said, well, look, we can't go on like this. We'll send the old man home in the hopes that you marry this very nice woman that we left behind when we came out after the war. We picked a very nice woman indeed, and we thought it would be suitable someday for him. And when we couldn't bear the old man anymore, we packed him off to England on £200 a year. That's all Clifton Station, 7,000 acres, that all they could afford to pay the owner. I didn't get any. I had my own income and my own farm and all that sort of thing. I was just managing Clifton, the only thing I got out of it was my keep, nothing else at all. Well, anyway, Nancy's got exactly the same history. We sent my father home on board this boat, and he got caught leaning over the rail on a lovely moonlight night with the blue and a woman leaning on the railing with him. He got caught with my mother-in-law. Nancy's father got caught. He went home. He got caught exactly like my father. See? Well, anyway, out of that, which was very good indeed, I had no family. My sister lost her first husband in the war. She slipped a baby, a 5 month in. She married a war wreck in the end. She had no family. My wife, soon after we married, she had an operation which she wouldn't have today, and she couldn't have a family. So neither of us had a family. So my father wrote out and said, "I'm terribly sorry, I cannot support," she's a very well-off woman he married, "I cannot support a wife on £200 a year." So I wrote back, "Terribly sorry, Dad, you'll have to bring her out here." So in the end, as was decided, he brought her out here. And to cut a long story short, we all lived together for a certain time, and then we couldn't bear it any longer. Two lots of family, different generations. And I happened to be walking, we had all this big farm across the river here, and I happened to be walking across here. I saw this extraordinary old dilapidated house across the river. And I said to myself, "Oh, that's lovely. I wonder if I'll be able to buy it." So I rang up an agent and said, "There's a house. It rather attracts me. It seems to be isolated from other houses. It seems to be land with it. And I'll be able to go across by boat to the farm." And I rang up the man and sent him down. I said, "On no account, say who it's for, because they'll bump up the thing, because they're supposed to be very wealthy." So he said, "Yes, it's for sale. It's been on the market for some time. And the price is £2,000. So I thought, "Oh, that's a gift from heaven." So we got my wife and we came over and saw it. And the frightful, dilapidated place you've ever seen. It was an old-fashioned poultry farm. All the poultry was here and the yards were there. And it was all dug up. There was no entrance. The carriage marks, you know how the carriage marks with the horse in down the middle? And anyway, we bought it. And we moved in here sometime in 1922.
Who did you buy it from?
Oh, the original owner was Nassels. The relation of the Nassels had married into the royal family, if you remember. There's a brother that minted money, and he built that enormous house. It was an enormous house, 12 bedrooms. I've got a photograph of the house, this huge house. Why he chose Clive in those days? Because Clive was always underwater. This was always underwater too, I'm kidding. Well, anyway, what did you ask me?
I was going to ask you about Clive in those days.
I'm waiting to get, I hope he doesn't die before I get it, some very good photographs of Clive underwater. I've seen them, but years ago.
Were there many houses here then?
No, there were cottages. You mean just in this spot or in Clive?
In Clive.
You'll see what I mean. You know the new rest home here. Do you know it?
No.
Well, are you Hastings Napier? You're Napier. Yes. Well, when you go out of here, you know the road that leads to Harmona? Well, just go past there on the right-hand side. There's a big rest home that's been built there. Well, you have a look on the right-hand side. There's still some little cottages, red New Zealand little cottages.
Was there any industry in the region?
We had a big blacksmith shop, an enormous hotel. I can show you a photograph of the hotel that was at Farndon. I can show you what the horses were like in those days, little horses. And I can show you that hotel that was brought across the river and dumped in its present site way up there, and the huge hotel fell down the earthquake. And now there's no hotel there at all. There's a small hotel across the road. I've got all that history and photographs and everything.
So the earliest forms of land transport were horse and cart?
Oh, Lord, yes. Look, when we came here in 1922, as I tell you, there was the middle track where the horse used to go and where the wheels used to go.
The local features that made transport difficult, I suppose, were our rivers.
Our rivers? Oh, very much so. Our uncle was drowned when he looked after the big grain property for Muddy Roberts.
Where was that?
See, the three stations built the Black Bridge. You wouldn't remember the Black Bridge pulled down. Where the present bridge is, going to Harmona, well, there used to be a big Black Bridge there. Well, that was pulled down way up near because of the flood. If you went to Harmona, this is a great big double story house, practically on the banks of the then Tukituk River. And that was managed by an uncle of mine, the mayor of Tanna. And he was drowned during the flood. There's no bridge. Swimming his horse across the Tukituk. Oh.
Do you remember much of the coastal shipping?
No. The coastal shipping I learned from Mr. Duncan, who I bought a piece of land next door to them in Napier, and I had a commercial flower garden there, and combined with this when we went in for commercial flower growing instead of farming, and I sold out of all my land. We used to own a big dairy farm, Parkaway, you see, and this is a 600 acre.
The Farndon block,
mm.
600 acres. Mm. Can you tell us a bit about the farming life?
Oh, yes, vast subject. See, Arnhem was one of the most difficult. There were no banks of rivers. And I went in for fattening bullocks and went in for sheep, breeding sheep and that sort of thing. And I used to have what I could, tame sheep, paint the gates and the things white, because we'd have to bay often. We'd hear it here. We'd be asleep, not unless it wasn't here, in the old house. In the middle of the night with heavy rain, we'd hear crashing and banging of water going through all the trees way across the river. And wife and I'd have to get up, and we'd know that the water was flowing across the farm. So we'd have to get up and try and swim our sheep to safety, all that sort of thing. Awful. And we'd lose all of our barley. We used to grow a lot of barley. Stacker had a first-class man doing all that. And we'd put them where you'd think were absolutely safe. We'd get a freak flood and spoil the whole lot.
Were these floods an annual occurrence?
Oh, practically. This was all through the season. You could have a summer flood.
How many people were living in the area?
Yeah, it was a working-class area only, except for the Lassels, who went there my time.
And what about the Maori houses on the farm, particularly Tiawonga?
Oh, no, you're thinking of what's the name of the part that's all there, this side of the Black Bridge. I can't remember. There's a par there, a very bad par indeed. All the occupants of it were not good Maoris at all. And they didn't breed with the Chinese that had a lot of leased land. Thank heaven, they've altered the par entirely and they've rebuilt the whole thing, and it's quite a nice par now. But in all my young days, it was a hell of a par.
There were excavations done a few years ago.
Were there? It's such a big subject.
It is. You. Did you have itinerant workers in to help you?
Only during harvest. And during harvest, we had a lot of people. We'd employ anyone. But we prefer people if they knew a little bit.
We will have noticed the farming methods have changed.
Oh, thank heaven I don't farm today, because There's so many diseases and so many things. I wouldn't own the sheep that my great nephew's got on the property at the moment. He's just got grazers to keep all the land. See, we've got 15 acres here. That again is another story.
So you sold some of the farmed and land?
Oh, we sold all farmed and land. This is originally 7 acres, you see. The long, narrow section that came up there, and the boundary was there. This is all Sir George Whitmore's land, all of this originally. And he had a great big house here, and unfortunately, the great big house was burnt down. Sir George Sunday, he owned all the land here and across the road there.
On this site?
No, just here where the Whites got their house now. Just through, the other side of these trees. But it's not the same house.
Just moving back to transport, can you remember your first car?
Yes, remember the first car, yes. Certainly it was bought from the Chambers, and I drove my father was an awful driver. Never, ever any good. Big with the horses. No damn good with the car. He learned to drive on the tennis court with Clifton, on the tennis court with Clifton. And he couldn't even control the car, and he gave all the edges onto the, oh, you got an idea. Well, he drove a chain drive car, drove it up to the thing, and that had bucket seats at the back. We children would get in at the back and sit in this hollow there, and Mum and Dad were in front there, you see. Had no hood or anything, that's all. And I can picture them going in that to Christmas party in my grandfather's in Napier. And my mother was great with visiting people. And she went down the side road there, and my father drove her down there. And he's driving back, but he couldn't drive. And when he came to the road that we were coming, he got tangled up in my mother's rug and went on backing, and he backed into this ditch of water with my sister and I. We were here, and here was the ditch, backed us into the ditch.
What make of car was it?
Woolsey.
How were your letters delivered in the early days when you were at Clifton?
Oh, I don't know. That was awful. We used to get our stores once we had a big storeroom up at the house built specially, and the cook would have to come up and get the stores from our storeroom. Quite a long walk up to the cook too, from the cookhouse to the house. Now we used to get the stores from the store down here, and once a month used to come by dray, you see.
Where was the store located?
Where the stores are now, in that line, they were real old stores. They used to suck everything. Almost black inside, long, narrow, high up in the ground because of thing. And the old storekeeper used to live at the back.
Can you remember the sort of things you bought?
Oh, Lord, yes. Oh, heavens, yes. And then they built this present house here many years after he retired and sold the store. Oh, we used to have to go in there, the children in the store, if we ever came to town, and leave the trap and horse at Farndon Railway Station and take the train into Napier.
First newspaper in Hawke's Bay was the Herald Tribune.
No, we never took the Herald Tribune. We were entirely Napier people. We didn't have much to do with Hastings at all. I still am a Napier person, although I don't often go there now.
Why was that?
Oh, because, you see, my grandfather and grandfather lived at Balquhidder.
What was their name?
Tanner. Thomas Tanner. He's the one I've got all the history. He was one of the 12 apostles. And so is my other grandfather. My grandfather Tanner sold a big block of Fern Hill, which used to belong to my grandfather Gordon. Oh, no, I've got all that history. With all the...
Can you tell us a little more about the land at Fern Hill?
No, it's all too big. It's all a very big thing. I came upon it the other day. I've forgotten what I've done with it. This will interest you. This tells you in writing what I've been telling you. I've got a very good memory. The trouble is, you see, I'm a relation of the original settlers. See, Thomas Tanner was the original settler before he married and went home to England to find a wife. He lived in a Rapo thing. At weekend mother, my mother used to come with a horse and gig. In those days, there was no bridge across here at all. We had to go across the ford, which was way above the bridge, up to our axles in water. You see the goldfish swimming about. We used to have to go across the ford there to go to school. Then this will bring you up to what happened this morning back into history. She used to drop me at the old Herotonga school, which is a big playing field now. You know where...
Where was the Herotonga school?
Do you know Mitre 10 store on the left as you go into? There's a big playing field that you get near Hastings. Well, it was in there, in the... Not Iona, the other girls.
Woodford
was quite close, just across. It's only been moved a few years in my mind. Well, Herotonga was just across in that big playing area there, the school. Well, my mother dropped me at the gates there, and I'd run into the big building. And in those days, you weren't allowed to kiss your mother goodbye, so you had to do it before the boys would see you. Rupert Carlisle of Wavers, I'm talking Wavers Big Station, he was a little bit older than me. He was caught. They had one of the first Rolls Royces smelling of money in those days. And he used to be dropped out of this antiquated old Rolls Royce. And he was heard by one of the boys or some of the boys, "Kiss me quick, Mum." I've never forgotten. And he was all that's known is "Kiss me quick." "Hi, kiss me quick." That sort of thing. Well, now, that goes back to what happened today. I've got this great nephew. This is the family of the Allens that are inheriting this place. We've got no children. This chap's father and mother and sister were all killed in the Erebus crash. Out of this house, you see, we lost them all in the crash. Well, that is David's father, sister and mother. And we've got the memorial there, just across from the gate here. We've got a mulberry tree and the names. It's all done, it's there forever. We've had a service and blessed and all that. Well, this Thomas is at King's College and he's come down for the break. He's 15 and I've been always very fond of him. I've hugged him, kissed him, given him $10 every time he's gone, treated him as a grandson, which he is. You see, his father and his brother were the two Allens who were brought up as my wife and my unofficially adopted children. We asked my, I'm deviating again, when we found we couldn't breed children, we loved children, and we planned for 10. We had a table made for 10, lovely table, huge table. Anyway, we didn't get any. And we said to my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, she was at school with the wife, you see, she's English, and we four were great friends indeed until he was killed flying in the war, you see, and that was just her. Well, anyway, we said to them, "We'll give you $1,000 to breed us a child." "No trouble," says my brother-in-law. "No trouble at all." Then God came to Mother. Mother said, "Yes, that's all right, but I know very well that I could never part with it." So we said, "All right, will you allow us to unofficially adopt your two children and treat them as ours?" "Yes, certainly, we'll share them with you." So since they've been little children, we've all shared them. And we've treated them as our own children. And we say, are our unofficial adopted children, but people don't understand what we mean, because they don't understand. And they inherit, not any Gordons at all, poor things. They've got plenty of money in that town. And these people come here, and they're going to carry on. They've got three children, a boy and two girls, and they're carrying on like my wife and I did, exactly the same thing, opening this for good work, this house. I can't go on. But going back to this place, when I die, it's going to be carried on in the same strict way that we've done. Marvellous. Well, anyway, this morning, he came with this boy, 15, and I've always hugged him goodbye and all that thing, put my arms around and kissed him, that sort of thing. Well, now he's come to this age with worried whether he'll be upset if I still put my arms around and squeeze him and say. So I talked it over with Nancy, see, and rather an awkward question. The boy is passing through a stage, you see, and I haven't been brought up in this other way. So I asked the mother on the telephone, put my problem. I said, do you think you'll be embarrassed this time if I welcome him, throwing my arms around him and kiss him like you always have, embrace him? And she didn't know, you see. So the mother told you, she rang up.
No, I saw Thomas.
Oh, you go on with the story there, because it's very interesting.
Right, I didn't know that he had been talking to Sarah Thomas.
No, Sarah told him about it.
Yeah, and I said to him, oh, the uncle was a bit worried about this business, wondered whether he, Thomas, would be embarrassed, you know, his great uncle kissing him. And he said, oh, he just laughed. He said, oh, no, not at all. He said, Mum told me about it. And he said, oh, no, he said, no, I like it, you know. So all was well.
It's rather interesting, you see, because I was petrified, having had this earlier thing. Things have changed, so you see, I'm a great, great, very big difference in ages, you see, and it must have prodded the mother, because the mother must have talked to Thomas, which is so lovely. I'm talking to her with Nancy, you see. It's a very ticklish subject for young people.
It can be.
I don't think today the same, is it?
Anyway, I'm going to throw my arms around.
And all the gay people and everything else.
Yeah, see, all the gay people, you won't talk about all this. You talk about things that you never talked about.
So your home now, which is large, was once quite small.
This, if you'd like to have a look at it, it's very interesting to see what it is.
Wow.
Now, I can only show you. I can show you the inside. It's all... You can see by the ceilings.
When was it built?
Oh, yeah, 1881. I'm having that printed above the front door.
Did you live then in the small house?
No, we lived in a partly small house. Partly. You see, I bought the first original bishop's court in Napier, way up the hill. Huge house. Turned it into five flats.
Was this before you bought Farndon?
Oh, no, afterwards, later.
Was it called Farndon when you bought it?
All the area there was Farndon.
Do you know why it was called Farndon?
Yes, it was originally built. All that land there was evidently owned by an earl or a lord or something of that sort, who sent out money from England to invest in land. He never came out, never saw it, but he sent money out to invest in land. And he bought a very big area there without having seen it. He must have lost heavily on it anyway. But at one period, it was a very big, one of the biggest milking sheds in New Zealand, I suppose, because the present milking shed is fairly big. They used to milk by hand a tremendous number of cows at a time. It used to be a double-story shed, a huge place. That has burnt down. And then they built another, and it was a very big shed when I bought it, but we never milked cows there. Got its own very big well, 3-inch well, and everything. But you couldn't drink the water. It smelt of sulphur and that sort of thing.
I was going to ask what the water supply was like in the early days.
Oh, marvellous. We've got 10 power pressure here, you know. It goes up into Nancy's room up there, even. And it's only our old wells out here, our original well.
Do you remember some of the names of the local families in the 20s?
Yes, but I'd have to get one the other day, which was I couldn't remember. But I'd have to write them down and think of it. Oh, yes. We were at that the other day because old man Glazebrook, you've heard of Glazebrook, have you?
Yes.
Well, old man Glazebrook lived here, and it was old man Glazebrook when he lived down here. That's before he married. He lived down here in Clyde, and he had a carting business. It is he that carted all the timber for the present big Clifton house for Bull Brothers.
So Bull Brothers were builders?
Builders.
They seem to have been an early Napier family.
There were three brothers.
What memories have you of early Napier and going in along the Marine Parade?
Oh, quite a lot when the stables were there. You see, the big stables were in what is Hastings Street now, great big stables. Same as Hastings had one, but Napier had a very big stables because all the coaches and things went into the back country. And the Taupo coach, you see, they were all there.
Can you recall travelling to Taupo?
Oh, yes.
Where did you stop overnight?
We used to ride from different... What's the name of the first... Where Mrs. Dunley... What's her name?
On the way
where the spring is. Yes.
Tarawera.
Tarawera. Tarawera was a great big hotel. We used to stay there. We did ride from Clifton there, but I can't remember and I can't get any one more thing to find out where we spent the night between Napier and Tarawera. I can remember going down the hill, missing the road. There's no longer a road there, it's too steep. I remember going down, still remember that, cutting off a vast amount of the road and going straight down the hill with the horses.
Where would you be travelling to? Would you be going?
Oh, yes, to Tarawera.
To Tarawera.
Hmm.
What was at Tarawera?
A great big hotel.
The hotel?
A halfway house. The coaches used to stay there, and my mother said it's time we went into the back country and got some other air from the thing. So we set off this particular time there. Other times we go by coach to the back country up this other way.
Kurupapanga,
where there's a huge hotel there where people used to stay at the bottom of Gentle Annie.
When they were en route.
Mm. To Taihape. And we had great friends that lived on that road. They had a huge station and we used to stay there.
Can you remember their name? Hunted.
Yes, Birches went there, but the Chambers bought it later, didn't they? They had their own store and everything. You had to be self-contained. You got Gentle Land and go in there. There's some lovely land in there when you get on top of the hills.
Can you remember Hawke's Bay when it was covered with more bush?
No. I can remember going down to Wellington when we had to go through, I've forgotten what they called the bush. No, the train would go through and you'd drive through the bush. But that had gone by the time I came back from school.
Is that the 50-mile bush or something?
The 70-mile bush.
I don't think it was much of that. I've forgotten. Those had been cut down, I think, a lot of it. But that had gone by the time I came back. There was no bush there at all. We used to have to go through it.
And what is your memory of the tree growth in this region?
Oh, you see, my grandfather Tanner was a great planter of trees, great planter. The Queen Square was given there by my grandpa and then planted all of those lovely oaks. And I saved that only a few years ago. My first cousin of mine didn't have trees or any sentiment at all. Hastings very nearly took that as a swimming area, public swimming area. And the then mayor, who was Giorgetti, who I liked very much indeed, I heard about this. And I said, you can't do that. There's a grandson that knows all the history of that. And my grandfather gave that square for recreation. There used to be a bandstand there. And people used to go there. It was in the country in those days. I remember the bandstand, that sort of thing. And people used to go out there and hold those on certain days and listen to the band. And I said, you're going to take all that history away and do that. They moved the grandstand. And now it's just a park, because Nancy V. Orton goes by there, her granddad. Yes, we've always been tree planters. I'm a great tree planter myself.
Do you think there should be more done in the district?
Oh, I do, yes. Well, people like cutting down trees.
You planted a lot of the trees here at Farndon?
All the trees, except four or five big ones there. And we bought this, there were no trees here at all. You could see the old bridge and everything from here. There were no trees here at all. I planted the avenue, you see.
What is the avenue?
Plane trees. Because I always said as a child, I always remembered my grandfather at Riversley had this lovely garden, beautiful garden, and the lovely drive up the plane too. I always said, even as a child, if I ever have a property where I can grow plane trees, I'll do it. It wasn't until we came here I saw the opportunity, and we sent down to Palmerston 2 years after we got to about 1923.
The trees are a great memorial, aren't they?
Oh, these are lovely trees. Photographs have been published of it because of the present day looting and all that sort of thing. I don't want anyone, I don't mind friends, we have a lot of public things here. We've had an awful lot too. But I don't want, now things all change. Nothing is safe. No property is safe today. We won't let anyone, a friend of mine said, oh, can I park my car inside your entrance down below? When I go to Napier, someone's picking me up. I said, no, you can't. It isn't safe. You can drive up here and park your car way up here, where passers-by don't see your car. You can't do anything today to attract anyone.
What time would you rather have lived at? What period of time?
I don't like the present time. I hate it. Well, would you like to come and see them? You've got such a big subject.
It's easier to look at it than talk about it.
Yeah. I'll show you part and you'll have to draw it in your... This we had done for my sister. You see, my sister, she's been dead now 3 years, and she lost her second husband. He was the war wreck. He died. And then she lived in Palmerston all alone. Then we tried to get her to move here, but 20 years ago we got her to move. She rang up one day, said, I'm ready to move. My wife and I got in the station wagon there and then, and went up there.